Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, hosting the Asian Festival, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. February 1st. It's a day of hands-on activities for kids and families with music, dance, martial arts demonstrations, food vendors preparing authentic Asian dishes, a gallery of bonsai trees, and other attractions. Details and ticket info at asianfestivalsa.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Right now, refugee resettlement in Texas is still a thing, but it's not clear how long that's going to be able to continue. In December, Texas Governor Greg Abbott announced that Texas would be the first state to block the resettlement of refugees under a September executive order signed by President Donald Trump. After Abbott's order, then, a Maryland federal judge blocked that executive order, and that judge's ruling remains in place for now. But what is happening with the reaction to Abbott's decision, and how is refugee resettlement continuing to operate under these stressful times, and how did we achieve some of these laws and practices and attitudes that we have about refugee resettlement? We're now joined by Ruth Wasm, clinical professor of policy practices in the LBJ School of Public Policy Affairs, of Public Affairs at the University of Texas at Austin. And Dr. Wasm, it's great to have you. The practices that we have now, the activity we're seeing with Governor Greg Abbott saying he wants to ban a refugee resettlement in Texas, what is he reacting to? What is he trying to achieve here that you can tell?
Well, in terms, I can't divine what motivates political leaders, but I think there is he is representing a tradition in American psyche that's been around since the beginning of people that have issues with that are kind of xenophobic, who have fears of the other. And so at the very time we've always, as a nation, celebrated the welcoming of refugees, we've also harbored a less than welcoming strain of xenophobia. And this goes way back to William Penn encouraging religious freedom when they settled Pennsylvania, but then being worried that the Germans and Scots who came there were not going to become Anglified. So this tension in American psychology as a people is longstanding. And it gets played out in kind of ebbs and flows over history.
Recent history excluded, the resettlement of refugees in the United States has largely enjoyed bipartisan support, even from Ronald Reagan.
Oh, yes, the Refugee Act and Gerald Ford and Dwight Eisenhower. We think of a lot, the earliest president that really pushed refugees was Harry Truman with the Displaced Persons Act, and trying to admit as many people as possible that he could. But Dwight Eisenhower, President Eisenhower, followed that. You see it, you know, with Kennedy, Johnson, all the way through. This, we really have today, Donald Trump was the first major party candidate for president that did not embrace refugees in the Statue of Liberty.
So do you think that this bipartisan attitude that the United States needs to be a leader in refugee resettlement comes from the view that the United States needs to be a world leader and an activist for peace?
It also comes from the view of refugees, unlike immigration and more broadly. Refugees are seen as it taps both a foreign policy geopolitical agenda as well as a religious and humanitarian sense of compassion and inclusion. So there's a lot of different elements to admitting refugees that are embraced. So we used it during the Cold War. It was one of the ways we made a statement about being the beacon of freedom. And the definition we use today is the definition that was created in the Cold War.
And what is that definition?
That to be a refugee, you have to demonstrate a well-founded fear of persecution if you are turned back or if you go back to your home country. And that persecution is based on one of five traits: your political opinion, your membership in a social group, your race, being part of an ethnic minority, and religion.
But previous to President Truman and the adoption of refugee resettlement practices and policies and laws, it was just the opposite, leading before World War II, right?
Correct. We had, during World War I, there was a minor provision in the law that did allow people that, because we think of World War I as the first major refugee occurrence in modern times after World War I and the Balkan Wars, and there were about 12 million people then that were displaced by World War I, and we did have a provision then that allowed people that were fleeing persecution in the United States. But in the 1920 and 1924 Immigration Act, which were the old quota laws that severely restricted immigration, we did not have any provisions for the admission of refugees or asylees.
How big was the USS St. Louis?
There were about 900 people that were on the, as I understand it, on the USS St. Louis in 1939. They were European Jews. Now, we had admitted about 100,000 refugees from Nazi Germany during the 1930s, but they came in through our old quota laws. And so when the ship, the St. Louis, showed up trying to seek entry here, the United States turned the ship away because we said the quotas had already been filled. And it was part of a broader denial that genocide was going on in Europe, and it was before we had a separate path in immigration law to admit people that were refugees. So there wasn't a path for people on this boat. So arguably, there could have been other ways under the authority of the president that they could have been allowed in, and it was extremely controversial. And the image of the St. Louis haunts us and is frequently brought up again. It was brought up again when the Haitians, after the coup with Aristide in 1990, and boatloads of Haitians were arriving here and turned away. And it comes up again today, where we have the lowest refugee admissions levels since the Refugee Act passed in 1980. Right now, there's 26 million people who have already met the definition of a refugee and are displaced worldwide, 26 million people.
And on the USS St. Louis, there were hundreds of people on that ship sent back to Nazi Germany who were executed, who were put in death camps.
Yeah.
And at the time, there was a phrase being used to those individuals telling them to get in line rather than trying to come
in through the quotas, come in through the quota laws, wait your turn.
Which is something we hear today.
Of course.
So with Governor Abbott deciding he's going to prohibit refugee resettlement in Texas, he's basically turning his back on the bipartisan tradition that we have established in the United States since that era and going backwards towards what we used to have before World War II. Is that about right?
Yeah, it's going back to the early 1920s. Yeah, that kind of thinking when we first started restricting immigration in large numbers, yeah. And it's an interesting thing because it's unclear what it means when he says that they can't come in, because a refugee, let's say my home state where I grew up in Ohio as a child, continues, if the governor there continues to admit refugees through the refugee resettlement program, and a refugee is resettled in Columbus, and then decides, well, they have family in Texas or they've heard about a job in Texas. We believe in freedom of movement. So not participating in the refugee resettlement program doesn't mean that refugees may not choose to move to Texas.
So what does it mean?
It means that the money, the refugee resettlement money that the state of Texas would otherwise get to help with housing refugees since 1980, when they created the refugee resettlement program, the federal government reimburses the state for expenses incurred in the resettlement of refugees. So if they need to go get some supplemental food assistance like SNAP, or they need some general assistance or TANF for the transition, or any of those expenses as they transition into the labor force, that the federal government, if you're in the refugee resettlement program, medical care, you get a reimbursement. So if Texas is not part of that program, then the state of Texas doesn't get that money. And when Governor Abbott ended participation in the refugee resettlement program a couple years ago, the federal government funded the Texas Refugee Resettlement Program separately through the Texas Refugee Resettlement Agency. You know, is there still going to be that opportunity with the latest version of Trump's policies and Abbott's position on them to ensure that Texas is able to support the refugees who live here, so that the Texas taxpayer doesn't pick up the slack, and that it comes out of the federal coffers?
Ruth Wasson, thank you so much. Clinical professor of policy practices at the Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas at Austin. It was great talking with you.
It was an honor to speak with you.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're continuing our conversation talking about the future of refugee resettlement in Texas. In December, Texas Governor Greg Abbott announced that Texas would be the first state to block resettlement of refugees under a September executive order signed by Donald Trump. We're now joined by Julian Aguilar. He's the immigration and border security reporter for the Texas Tribune. Julian, how was Greg Abbott's decision, his announcement that Texas would be the first state to block resettlement of refugees, how was that received?
It was received, I think, as we all expected. You know, the immigrant rights groups, Democrats, folks on the left, folks that have been watching not only what's going on our southern border, but just watching this program unfold over the last few years, were understandably and predictably upset at the governor's decision. Not only because he said no, but because of Texas's longstanding history of leading the country with respect to the number of refugees that have been resettled here within our state's borders. But, you know, and for Abbott supporters, it was something that they praised. And I don't think folks were that surprised. You know, where they were upset is different from where they were surprised. And most of the folks that spoke out against the decision said that they weren't shocked, given the governor's history with trying to sue to stop Syrian refugees in 2016 and 2017, with respect to, you know, immigration state-based policies like SB4, and just this recent history over the last few years. So upset and disappointed if you don't support the governor's decision, but not surprised overall, is pretty much how it boiled down.
One of the reasoning that the governor presented in his decision, saying that Texas needed to focus on people that we have here already. Any idea what he means by that, and will there be some sort of policy announcement to deal with that?
Well, it's unclear. I mean, as everybody knows, that, you know, they can't pass any state-based policy without the legislature convening, which won't happen for another year. But you raise a good question. You know, what exactly did he mean, and what's going to be done? He went on Fox and Friends, which is generally a friendly audience for the governor and folks in the Republican Party, and explained, just as you said, that, you know, more needed to be done for the folks that are already here. And what the refugee groups said in response was, you know, it doesn't necessarily work that way. It's not a big pool of federal money that the states can draw down and use for whatever purpose. They said, look, this is money and resources set aside for refugees only. It can't be used to address homelessness or address, you know, any other issue that they think needs to be addressed. And I will say that, you know, the folks that are for the refugee resettlement program, none of them disagreed that things needed to be done for other populations, for example, veterans or for the homeless or for other groups that needed some sort of aid, whether it's state or federal. Nobody disagreed with the governor's point that there are a lot of people in Texas that need help. But what they said is, you know, by denying anything to the state, you know, that just kind of goes against what the governor was saying, you know, well, we need to help other people, so we're not going to help, you know, this group at all. You know, it's like, you can't pick one or the other. And, you know, the governor responded and said, no, we know exactly how the program works. We just decided to opt out of it because, you know, folks, nonprofits and things like that, they need to concentrate their efforts on the people that are already here. It should be noted that a federal judge blocked the Trump administration's executive order, which was issued in September and which was the genesis for this refugee resettlement decision that the governors had to make. So as you know, recent as last week, the refugee resettlement programs and the nonprofits, they're moving along as if nothing has changed because of this court order. It's expected to go to appeals, and you know, it's unclear when the final decision will be made, but as long as this temporary injunction is in place, a lot of these folks are going to continue moving as if the governor hadn't chimed in at all.
And the governor, when he made that announcement, it was in December, right around the Christmas holidays. People really made some... they tried to make something of that. Like, this is really heartless in a view.
Sure. I mean, again, you know, the folks that are against the decision, they'll use a lot of, you know, whatever's in their toolbox, be it, you know, the Christmas holiday season right around the corner or previous decisions, just to amplify their point. But I think one thing that was noticeable was that the governor made this decision, you know, sort of quietly with respect to other things that he's done. We remember when he signed Senate Bill 4, which is the state-based, you know, anti-sanctuary cities bill. But he did that on Facebook Live and not at a big gathering at the Capitol the way he does with other bill signings. So that kind of showed that, you know, he knows that it's a controversial issue. So when he made this decision, it was close to the holiday season when folks were kind of tuning out. It was late in the afternoon, and it wasn't a big sort of celebratory thing that he did, which I think sort of speaks to the fact that he knew it was a controversial decision. But you know, it's not going to bother any of his supporters. You know, I mean, this is just one example of when the governor doubles down on something that he believes in, you know, on the immigration issue, he's going to do it whether it's loudly or quietly, and his supporters are going to be all in for it, which is exactly what we saw in this situation. You know, and I think a lot of people misunderstand the program. I think a lot of them conflate the refugee resettlement program with what's going on in cities like here in El Paso, where I am, or in Brownsville or Laredo, where that you're just seeing you know, tens of thousands of people trying to get in to seek asylum. It's not the same program. I mean, the refugee resettlement program, the folks that apply to enter the United States through this program, they're vetted through the United Nations and embassies. I mean, it's a lot more of a strict process than just showing up at the border and waiting. But, you know, for the folks that support crackdown on immigration, whether it's unauthorized, whether it's DACA, whether it's legal immigration, whether it's visas, you know, whatever form or fashion, you know, I think they see this refugee resettlement program and Texas' decision to opt out of it as just one more sort of tool in the toolbox that the Republicans have to go along with the Republicans at the federal level to restrict immigration on all fronts.
But the Texas bishops and also some evangelical groups were definitely vocal in condemning this decision.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, again, you know, that was expected. It wasn't a big shock, especially given the fact that the faith-based groups had spoken out against other state measures. You know, I've brought up SB 4 because that's the most recent and probably the most significant. But, I mean, I covered this at the Capitol in Austin, and, you know, we saw the groups of faith-based denominations from across the board speak out against these immigration policies. So it wasn't surprising that the Catholic bishops did, especially because the governor has touted his Catholicism, you know, quite often. So they were trying to say, look, you know, you're one of us. You should abide by these certain principles and these guidelines. And, you know, there was some talk about maybe people didn't exactly understand the refugee resettlement program and how limited it is and how small the program was, so it wasn't going to be a big factor. And another thing, aside from the faith-based groups, a lot of folks also, you know, touted the economic benefits of the refugee resettlement program. They touted a 2015 study by the New American Economy, which is a nonpartisan think tank that, you know, promotes immigration on the economic level. And they said, you know, these folks are entrepreneurs. They, you know, they're fleeing their country for one specific purpose, but they come here and they're happy to be here. They're grateful to be here. And in turn, they open businesses and they invest and they pay taxes. So that's another argument that was made, but it seemed to fall on deaf ears.
Any chance that Governor Abbott has going to move away from this policy, or is he all in? Is any signs that he may be rethinking it?
I mean, I haven't seen any. I would be surprised if he did. But with respect to the statements that we've gotten from the governor's office, you know, they keep saying no. You know, this is the decision that we made, and this is why we made it. And they haven't given any hints that they'll dial back. And it should be noted, in the governor's defense, because he opted out of the program, and this is something that's been said on the record several times, is that it doesn't mean that refugees cannot come to Texas eventually. You know, for example, if somebody resettles in Louisiana, they could resettle there through the nonprofits and get that aid and get on their feet there and then eventually on their own move to Texas. So it's not like Texas is closing its borders to refugees if they settle in another state. But the counter argument to that is that there are a lot of refugees that are already here, and a lot of folks want to be reunited quickly with these family members. So making them go to another state before they get to Texas is just another hurdle. And maybe he was waiting for the court decision to play out. And as we have all seen on a lot of immigration policies that are in litigation, it takes quite a while for these things to get ultimately settled. For him to rescind the letter and say, okay, we'll opt in, either because he had a change of heart, because people convinced him to, I don't see it happening, but I could be wrong. So we'll see.
Julian Aguilar, immigration and border security reporter for the Texas Tribune. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.